with him quite a while. You know, so usually the better guys are outside.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City of Arroyo Grande. This is our council meeting for Tuesday, August 27th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Ray.
Here.
Councilmember Brown.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute. We're very pleased to have Lenny Jones here from the Arroyo Grande Rotary Club to do our flag salute. If you would please remain standing for our invocation, Reverend Valerie Hart from St. Barnabas Episcopal Church is here to do that for us as well.
Please join me in pledging our allegiance to our flag of the United States of America. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Creator of the universe, behold and visit, we pray, the cities of the earth. Renew the ties of mutual regard which form our civic life. Send us honest and able leaders. Enable us to eliminate poverty, prejudice, the well-being of all people. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend Hart. Appreciate you being here tonight. And Lenny, let's hear about Rotary.
Hello, hello. So I'm the president of the Arroyo Grande Rotary Club of Arroyo Grande, formed, I believe, I'm going by memory, 1945, maybe 1947. We currently have about 47 members, and here's some things we've done this year with my term, which has only been 2 months, and I am counting. I've got 8 months left. We helped stuff the bus with $1,000. That was for the United Way, which was 2 weeks ago. Backpack program, we gave $850 worth of backpacks to the Boys and Girls Club in Oceano. They got backpacks and school supplies. We're helping sponsor the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, the Branch Elementary School. We're buying them. We're helping buy microscopes for Roy Grande for the Branch School. And each year we hand out $10,000 worth of scholarships to the Roy Grande High. The next big event that we're doing is going to be the world-famous fish fry. It's in about a month, and it'll be right across the street. So join in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate all that Rotary does for the community, and we know it's going to be a pleasant, uneventful 8 months for you. So.
I'll hold you to it.
All right, moving on to item 5, agenda review. Item 5A is closed session announcements. The council did meet on Tuesday, August 13th, and during that closed session, we discussed three separate labor issues. The council took no reportable action, therefore we have no report out of closed session at this time. Item 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
Yeah, I was wondering there for a second. We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Moving on to item 6, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the audience to come forward and comment on any item that is not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any.
One of the programs I manage is the Injury Prevention Program. We got a grant several years ago from the Office of Traffic Safety to do pedestrian safety classes around the county. According to 2010 Office of Traffic Safety data, San Luis Obispo County ranks fourth in the state for the number of pedestrians over 65 who are injured or killed in pedestrian accidents. There are over 58,000 senior citizens, 60 and older, in our county, and this population has increased by 29% in the past 10 years. Seniors are at increased risk of injury, and they recover more slowly. We also got a grant opportunity about 6 months ago to do some enhanced enforcement around crosswalks and education. So we contacted the Arroyo Grande, the Pismo, and the Grover Beach Police Departments, and they all agreed to participate. I would like to thank Commander Bo Pryor, who was our contact at Arroyo Grande PD. He was just great. And so what the police officers did is they went out to crosswalks that were identified as high risk, and they did enforcement around the crosswalk. So they had an off-duty police officer who would walk out into the crosswalk and see if the cars would stop. The first intersection they went to on August 1st was Alpine Street at East Grand. There are numerous pedestrians crossing the street to access the mini markets and the restaurant and the hotel. This is also a primary route for kids walking home from Paulding Middle School. There have been numerous complaints of near misses at this intersection in the past several years. So on August 1st, from 1 to 4 p.m., they went out and there were 44 decoy attempts. In other words, 44 times police officer tried to cross the street to see if anyone would stop. 18 vehicles were cited, and 2 vehicles were given a warning, which results in a compliance of 55%. So in other words, only 55% of the time, cars were stopping at this intersection. On August 22nd, they went out to Juniper and East Grand. There are many people who cross this street heading to the Smart and Final and the Dollar Shopping Center. There have been complaints of numerous close calls with vehicle and pedestrians, as well as 2 pedestrians were hit in this intersection in the past 3 years. A number of pedestrians in this area are senior citizens because there's 2 retirement apartment complexes right around this area. So on August 22nd, they went out again from 1 to 4 p.m. This time there were 67 decoy attempts, and he had a higher compliance rate. 66% of the cars stopped, but 34% of them didn't. So, you know, my objective of being here tonight is to make you aware of this issue. So with your agreement, I would leave them with city staff. Is there any way we can get these out to businesses in the community, do you believe? So I'm going to leave these with you. Thank you very much. Thank you to your police department for being so willing to participate.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I can't tell you what a valuable program this is, and I appreciate you taking the time to do this sort of intervention, if you will, in our city. And I can tell you from experience, in fact, the crosswalk at Juniper and Grand, I may have been one of the near misses there trying to cross that street. Yeah. So I fully understand what you're talking about. So thanks so much for the work that you have done and will do. And leave the signs with us. We'll get them up.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Hi there, my name is April McLaughlin and I live in the Five Cities. I had a handout that I wanted attached either to the minutes or I don't know who I'm supposed to, I give that to you. What I had handed over were the minutes from the July 17th meeting with the sanitation district that just happened, as well as some other documents that I happen to run across that give me concern. And so I basically just wanted to discuss one of the items that was on that agenda, and I know you guys aren't the Sand District, but you all were represented through, you know, you're my Arroyo Grande Chamber, or my city council, and through you, you direct whoever is on that, I would assume, to make decisions or represent us. So with that in mind, there was an item on the agenda that went in as, I'm sorry, I'm not used to talking in front of people, closed session. And I believe that that wasn't appropriate for closed session. It had to do with Mr. Wallace having an investigation into, like a forensic audit, basically. And I want that to happen. And I, what happened in closed session was that even the discussion of it was quashed, not future action to be discussed later, but discussion at all was quashed in closed session. So I would like to understand if you, the city council, advise the person on that board on how to represent the city of Arroyo Grande on that board. Does that person make those decisions on their own? None of this really hit the light of day for me to know that this was going to be happening and to instruct my thoughts on it as a city of Arroyo Grande resident. As a
pull from the consent agenda for further clarification, additional discussion, or an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward on any of the items on consent. If you're following along, we're going to be discussing consent items 8A through 8I. So at this time, if there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward on any of those consent items, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. 8A through 8I. Anyone would like to come forward and comment on the consent agenda? Okay. All right. We'll bring this back to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items to pull?
Yes. 8D.
D. David?
David.
Okay. I would like to pull 8G. And with that, I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items. I don't want to pull 8F just yet.
Okay.
Steve. Consent items 8A through 8I, with the exception of 8D David and 8G George.
So moved.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Hearing none. Anything to read in there tonight, Tim?
Indeed, Mayor Ferrara. Item 8H is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending Chapter 12.16 of Title 12 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code, Community Tree Program.
Okay. Very good. If there's nothing further, roll call, please.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, let's go back to 8D. Councilmember Ray.
I have no problem with 8D. The only reason I wanted to pull it was to acknowledge the incredibly hard work that went into getting this onto our consent agenda. Lots of closed-door sessions, lots of negotiations, and I'm sure a lot of sleepless nights by our staff. And I really, really, really would like the public to know just how much work went into getting this on this consent agenda, and it'll be very nice to have this done. And thank you to everybody who was involved, and I'm just so happy that it's finally here. So thank you so much, Steve, and look the hard work that they do as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that emphasis. Certainly appropriate. I pulled 8G just for kind of a quick overview, and the reason for this is, as you know, that the last time we did a vehicle purchase, we sort of got a bit of backlash, if you will, from the media because I don't think it was very clear as to how we operate the bidding process, particularly as it relates to local vendors. And so what I just wanted to do, mostly for the public's benefit, is kind of just very quickly go through, run through the bidding process in a very general term. Jeff, and then I have a couple of specific questions, but and I realize that we give some accommodation as best we can as a general law city. We've gone about as far as we can go as a general law city, and we're sort of bound by state law when it comes to the bidding process. So if you could kind of fill in the blanks and just talk about a little bit about how we got to where we were with 8G.
Certainly, Mayor Ferraro, members of the council, thank you. Good evening. Jeff English, Public Works, and tonight we are asking the council to approve the purchase of 10 vehicles for the Public Works Department. This is a combination of four separate bid projects that went forward. First of all, the average age of the vehicle that we're replacing is 19 years old, so I want to commend our mechanic for keeping our vehicles on the road that long. And it has been some time since we've replaced vehicles, so your employees are good stewards of their vehicles. First of all, let you know we did separate this bid package into four separate packages because of the specialization of the certain vehicles. Not every dealer will cover or carry all of the separate types of vehicles. We did distribute bid specifications for a backhoe, sent that out to four separate vendors. It's very specialized. There's really just two different types of vehicles that that can be purchased, a Caterpillar and a John Deere. Low bidder was Coastline Equipment of Santa Maria. We also bid a single vehicle, a light-duty truck. We actually have need for a light-duty pickup truck over at the Soto Sports Complex. We need a narrow wheelbase to get no longer makes the Ranger. Chevy no longer makes the S10. There's just not a vehicle that meets those specifications. We also bid, and I tried to bid as much as I can, these packages together, as many vehicles together as possible, so we'd have the same type of vehicle and the same dealer instead of dealing with a variety of dealers. We had seven vehicles or service trucks that we bid together, and we bid them by tonnage. There's a half-ton truck, three-quarter-ton truck, and then we bid a two-and-a-half-ton truck, one which will be a dump truck and one which will be a water truck, which will replace the water truck that we've been using for many years. We distributed nine bids locally, nine bid packages, and we had three of them that were returned. And again, we do follow our procurement policy, and we advertise our bids. We send them out. We provide very clear specifications and deadlines that those bids are due. Perry Ford of San Luis Obispo was the low bidder. As you mentioned, we do have a local low bidder preference of 5%, and even with that 5% discount, our local Ford dealership did not get that bid. I did talk to the service, the fleet director. He said that he failed to contact Ford at the national level and find out that they do, in fact, have some municipal discounts. He missed it and just got the bid wrong. And he apologized and said, next time I'm going to sharpen my pencil. And so, again, Perry Ford got that particular bid. And then we had one final specialized vehicle, our stencil truck, which is a paint truck. That's what the guys go around and paint all our stop legends and stop markings on the streets and speed limits markings. And whenever possible, I look for a piggyback opportunity where we can prevent going through the bidding process where there isn't a local vendor to purchase. And so I looked around and I found that San Luis Obispo bid the exact same, San Luis Obispo County bid the exact same vehicle that we were looking for, and Malahi Ford locally was the successful bidder in that process. And so we're recommending tonight that the council award a $92,000 purchase to Malahi Ford for that stencil truck through the piggyback arrangement.
For Jeff? Okay, if there are no questions, I would approve staff's recommendation for 8G.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, moving on to item 9, public hearings. We have none this evening. Item 10, continued business. 10A is consideration of a parking lot configuration for the police station upgrade. This is the project located at 200 North Halcyon Street. And good evening, Teresa.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Let me pull up the presentation here. We are here tonight for a continued discussion of our parking lot at our police station upgrade project. At our last meeting in September, the council directed staff to design a modified option 2. We considered three options in September. Again, those options were saving the eucalyptus grove, saving some of the eucalyptus grove, and removing the eucalyptus grove in terms of providing additional parking for our parking lot. The direction at that time was to preserve the two healthiest and largest of the eucalyptus trees on the edge of the property, one on Rena and one on Halcyon. And also we had some questions about the Halcyon widening that we wanted to and further investigate. Again, we've gone through a series of discussions on a police upgrade project, and the project we have now designed is intended to facilitate most of our most urgent needs for the police station project, and again, focusing on providing that off-street parking. And just a slide to reorient ourselves, we're in this triangular section off of between Halcyon Road and Rena Street, and that property, 12-foot travel lanes and parking lanes and sidewalks. And we've designed the options for the police station project to enable widening now or widening in the future without impacting the actual parking lot, and the design before you tonight would also not impact trees that would be planted, street trees that would be planted as part of the project. We have been studying the Halcyon corridor amongst other corridors in our circulation update that's been proceeding. And initial study of the corridor indicates a three-lane configuration would be sufficient in terms of circulation and capacity needs. And that would provide either a center turn lane or one parking lane with some Class 2 bike lanes. However, staff does not believe that the completion of all the traffic data, which is still in progress, is necessary to make a decision at this time. And that's due to the fact that there are essential design deficiencies that are independent of traffic volumes, and mostly that's that that turn lane that drops at East Grand Avenue where North Halcyon begins. And, you know, the fact that we do not anticipate widening for many years due to cost constraints and unavailability of right-of-way. We have the cemetery, and we have several obstructed areas in that North Halcyon corridor. Again, I want to reiterate, though, that the site design provides for the widening without impacting the parking lot, and as designed now, we wouldn't be removing any mature street trees in the future in the event that we do proceed with the widening. And this was reminiscent in September discussion about the trees. We went over each tree and the health of those trees, and that directed us toward what we called option two. Again, saving the two trees here, shown here, the two biggest trees, one on Halcyon and one on Rena. And we're here tonight with a modified option 2A, so you have a look of what that looks like and what that entails. And we also have received additional correspondence with the Tree Guild. Some very careful consideration of placement of impervious surfaces, hand trenching around the roots. There's a list in your staff report, and it did modify the site design to provide a little bit of additional room around those tree roots, and still would entail structures over the parking spaces under that tree canopy. After that discussion and after the distribution of the City Council report, we received some additional comments and consideration by members of the Tree Guild. They had met and discussed these trees in detail, the benefits of saving those trees, and the potential benefits of including different tree specimens with the parking lot design, and essentially achieving more trees for the project site. And so you have in your possession now, modified option 3A. Option 3 was discussed at the September meeting. This was the option that included removing the eucalyptus trees altogether. This is modified to include additional planting of trees with different tree specimens. The intent overall is to get additional parking and additional trees. We have included some larger specimen trees, sycamores, as identified by the Tree Guild, in the interior of the lot, and street trees on the Rena and Halcyon frontages. And with that, I'm going to go back to option 2A, and I'm going to introduce once again Craig Atkinson, the architect for the project, and he'll just walk you through the differences between the two site designs.
Good evening, Council. As Teresa mentioned, option 2A essentially leaves the two existing eucalyptus on either end, which is kind of the round dashed lines here. We place some other street trees along Halcyon and two along Reina to accommodate, and they wouldn't have to be removed. Along here as before, there is a kind of a manual gate here in case the main entrance is blocked. This is the main entrance off of Reina into the staffed parking area, and you can see here that the command vehicle gets parked, and it's actually underneath one of the eucalyptus trees. So 3A, let me go back. 2A also parks about 41, the total count of spaces or areas needed for the police vehicles, staff, and all the vehicles involved is 49. This allows for the parking of 41 vehicles total, with really the downside being in there's six staff vehicles that aren't parked in this scenario, and there's six staff vehicles and one truck space that's not within that count. In option 3, we actually, as Teresa mentioned, plant more street and site trees and have used the recommendations of the Tree Guild to place the trees in our landscape architect to kind of place them generally where they would go, as this is a design that's still in the conceptual stage. We've moved the manual entrance or exit down here to allow the command vehicle to be parked down in this area, and you still enter off of Reina for the main entrance and exit. This particular option, you are able to park 46 of the 49 vehicles, so we end up being short two staff vehicles and one of the truck spaces in this particular option. So in addition, this option doesn't make use of the covered structures as there's no eucalyptus, and we still are looking at kind of an opaque-looking ornamental fence to surround the property.
And that would conclude our report, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Teresa or our consultant, Councilmember Ray?
Craig, I have a quick question, only because I wasn't here last time. And I'm sorry I wasn't able to ask the question beforehand.
You couldn't see someone's face. You couldn't see. But you would make out the silhouette of an individual moving around behind that area.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Councilmember Brown, question?
Yes, please. Thank you. Teresa, how old are those two eucalyptus trees that are that we proposed to save?
I don't know exactly how old they are. They're very mature trees. Part of the mitigation would include, if we were to choose option 2A, would be to remove some of the branches, some of the dead branches or the crossed branches, And do some trimming. So there is some indication of previous, you know, limb failure, but I do not know the actual age of the tree.
Okay. Is the arborist here tonight?
No, not tonight.
Okay, so then my other question is, we voted on this in September, and it's my understanding that the arborist walked this property before September. Is that correct? That's what I was told.
The arborist has visited the site many times over the years, and we had received some comments from Kristen Barnett right before the September meeting, indicating that, you know, that those trees of the bunch were, you know, obviously the most mature and healthiest. Since that time, we went out to confirm that with Dave Reagan, the arborist, who since has conveyed his thoughts and discussed in additional detail the health of those trees with other members of the tree guild.
Then my other comment or question is, it's my belief that either by the library or the Women's Center, there's a parking lot spaces that have eucalyptus trees in which people park all the time, and we don't have covered structures, and it doesn't seem to be an issue. Why is it an issue here where it's not an issue in other public spots within the city?
Well, I'm aware of the parking spaces at the Women's Center and the lower parking lot. I would just observe that certainly the spots that go first are the ones that are not under the tree canopy. It's just it's mostly that the leaves and the droppings from those eucalyptus trees can be very messy for the cars, and there's some risk due to limb failure. But that is true. There's parking.
Guthrie?
I asked this question earlier today, but it has to do with the tree in the center and the backup distances. And I realize that's the tree canopy, and although I would assume that the planter underneath is probably about equivalent to the tree canopy. I'm just wondering, what's the depth of, you know, the parking spaces that are right in front of the police station there, and then what would their backup distance be? I'm just trying to scale it off here, but it's not easy.
Yeah, the depth of those spaces, due to them being accessible, are 18 feet. And so the backup distance is 20 feet, roughly, in the conceptual design.
So if you were an 18-foot vehicle, a truck or something, that would be certainly be a very tight spot.
Yes.
But there are other spaces that I guess.
Okay. All right, thank you. Any other questions? I do have one question again, Teresa, on the trees. When Dave Reagan went out there, he made comments about the drip line. What kind of space was he talking about that we would have to accommodate around the drip line in order for there not to be root disturbance and without damaging the viability of the trees, those two trees?
Well, generally, he was recommending to stay out of the drip line entirely. You know, and we would really measure that after the trimming would take place, because some of the branches would be removed. However, he was very concerned about the, you know, the root structure and the integrity of the root structure with the construction so close to those roots. And in the design, I think we mostly moved out of the drip line, and where we were close included pervious concrete, pervious pavers. But there would have to be hand trenching and some, you know, potential design modifications once construction started and we knew where those roots were.
And when we pour a parking lot, what are we talking about in terms of depth when we're looking at both asphalt and base material, approximately?
I would guess basically that you'd probably be 13 to 14 inches because of the types of vehicles. You're getting construction that would have to be spec'd out and done by hand.
Any other questions? All right. This is not a public hearing, but obviously it's an important issue in the city. Anyone who would like to come forward and comment on this would be an opportunity. Anyone? Okay. We'll close any public comment on this item. We'll bring it back to the council, and we will start with Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I think from my previous votes that certainly I'm in favor of expanding the parking lot and going with the newest option. I do appreciate that the Tree Guild and the arborists have recognized some of the limitations here and really seen the possibilities of planting new trees and preparing for what will be the ultimate future use here. I do have some concerns about the tree in the middle of the parking lot. It's not a deal killer for me, but I driven down that road and there's a lot of big vehicles that are driven by the staff members, and I do think that the tree in the middle could be an issue, but I'm sure they can work that out. As for widening Halcyon, again, it's not a deal killer for me, but I would actually still widen Halcyon at this point for two reasons. One, I actually think the parking has some value, even though we're not going to get the traffic flow we might think. But I do think that the parking does have some value for whatever public is attending is having to go to the police station. It also is something of a precedent that, you know, that we're saying our projects are exempt, but if we were asking a private developer to develop here, we'd almost certainly be asking them to widen the road and pay for widening the road. And finally, while it's, you know, if you did future value, it's hard to calculate the future value, but there is savings in doing it the same time that we do Halcyon. And as I remember, it was about $20,000 last time versus doing it right now versus doing it at some future date. Some future date is going to be even more expensive. But, again, it's not a deal killer for me. If the council majority is in favor of that, I certainly would go along with that. So I think this is an improvement. I think it is. I think 5 years from now we'll be glad that we made this move. For the first, you know, when there are small trees in the beginning, yeah, we're going to wonder where those skyline trees went to, but...
Albeit more smaller trees, there is a difference. As you get older, you understand the value of mature trees and mature landscaping versus smaller trees. It's not enough just to say, so we'll get rid of two and we'll plant a bunch more, so therefore it's all equal. It's not. There's clearly not. There's a difference, and that difference needs to be recognized, and it's not being recognized. I think saving the two trees was a great compromise based on all the uproar that we had previously with the veterinary hospital. I think it was a reasonable compromise. I know that arborists walked that site many, many times before, and that was never brought up before our September vote until after the vote. So until I get a chance to at least talk to him in public session and in public view, I'm not willing to vote on any change. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Ray.
I'm sorry. Can I ask you a quick question before I go to that? It's Dave Regan that we're talking about, right?
Correct.
And his letter is in here.
Correct.
So
I want to talk to him directly.
Okay. Okay. I want to make sure I was hearing you properly.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. First of all, I didn't get to weigh in on this before because of my absence, so I will say that it's my understanding that my comments did get read that evening, though, and I of everybody up here probably had the most problem with removing any of the trees based on what we did at VCA, and I was able to kind of switch around my thinking when we went forward with this in that when you're ending up with two contiguous lots, they became center trees, and I really did understand that argument. And so at that time, if I would have voted, it would have been for the version that did not include, that included taking down the trees. I was surprised that that was what had come out. The saving the two is what came out of that. So then now we're looking at the possibility of taking out two more. And so I ask myself not just whether or not there's wisdom in removing those skyline trees, but what do we gain from doing that? And based on a lot of information that we've received in the last month or so about what's going on in our city and what our police are dealing with, It's come to my attention that the officer safety and that secure parking is really more than just the ideal. This is something that at this point is necessary. And with the agreement of the Tree Guild and the agreement in writing with Dave Reagan that we can remove these trees and that it's even possibly the necessity of removing vehicles in a quick fashion would come into play. That they can do it safely, but if they have to do it quickly and we add that in, I don't want to do anything that's going to hamper the police's ability, even for 10 seconds, to get to my house. So I would unfortunately like to see that go. I just would like to give as much room in there for safety as possible. And I'm not entirely sure how much that's going to add back into the skyline, and perhaps we can put that somewhere else on the property rather than losing the tree. Perhaps we can move it maybe over to by spot number 26 on the what would be the old property line. I don't know where you could do that, Craig. I'm sure that you'll figure that out. But I don't want to lose the tree. I like all the mitigations that the Tree Guild has given us, but I'm not so sure that that's the right location for that one. With regard to the street widening, I guess I could have gone either way until Councilmember Guthrie suggested, I hadn't thought of it, that we were going to get parking out of it on the Halcyon side. And I wanted to ask a question about that. So I heard Steve click, and he was right on. So can you address that idea?
So there is parking along the street, so we wouldn't gain additional on-street spaces by the widening. We would gain more comfortable on-street parking spaces. We'd have more room, so you could feel like you can open your door safely. But the parking aisle, if you will, is available now. So the difference in spots wouldn't change that much. We would have a driveway apron there for that gate that would eliminate probably one parking space on Halcyon.
So we'd actually lose one parking space if we went ahead with the widening? Is that what I'm hearing you say? Or we're going to lose it either way?
Regardless.
Okay, so with the widening, we're not going to gain anything in the parking on that?
Correct.
Except for perhaps some safety issues?
Correct.
Okay.
I actually don't think. I think what happens in this scenario is we're actually moving a driveway that exists, because there is a driveway now that exists to get into the VCA parking lot. So I think the parking would remain the same. I don't think you would gain or lose by where we have the driveway location.
Okay. Thank you very much. So again, kind of going back to the skyline trees issue, it will look so different over there without those eucalyptus trees there, and it will look empty for a while. But I also want to just...
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Back when we were first discussing this, when the veterinary hospital wanted to expand, I was willing to sacrifice trees back then. I don't have any problems with the recommendations that have been brought forward by staff, and I do take Dave Reagan's opinion very seriously. I've had a lot of conversations with him. He's a pro. He knows what he's talking about. His belief is that if we try to save these trees, we're actually not going to probably do a real good job of it. They're going to be damaged. Their root systems are going to be damaged through the process. In the long run, we're going to end up with much better trees here than trying to save those too. So I'll support 3A tonight. I'll bring up a point. Most police officers like to back in. So when they leave, they're going to go straight out. So I don't think that tree position is going to be an issue in terms of officers getting out of there quickly. They're going to get out quickly. They're going to adapt to that tree very, very rapidly, and most officers are going to be backing in when they go in so that they're ready to pull out face forward when they leave anyway. So I think that's a positive. In terms of widening Halcyon, I think I can wait for that. I don't see any real positive in doing it right now. There's no – I don't know how much of a savings there'd be in doing that. So I'd be willing to support bringing item 3A forward tonight and not widening Halcyon. Stand by that.
Okay. Thank you. Well, this has been, I guess, the best way to characterize it, for me at least, a roller coaster issue. And You know, I'm looking back at when this project first came to us with the VCA building, and you know, to be honest with you, at the last meeting when we discussed this, I did not recall the depth of, involvement and exploration that we did on the root system of those trees when that VCA project was proposed. What we were looking at back then in the Tree Guild, and this sort of adds to the kind of the roller coaster ride, back then the Tree Guild was recommending that we keep all of the trees. Or at least, I'm not sure if the Tree Guild was there at the time, but the recommendation, vault and base material, we were talking about foundation, the foundation of a building, which would have gone down considerably deeper. And I remember getting down, and I think you were out there, Tim, but we weren't down more than, I think, a foot, 12, 14 inches when we hit the first root. And that was on the smaller tree. One of the smaller trees. So they're clearly, and for me at the time, that was sort of the deciding factor. There definitely was going to be impact on the root system for the entire tree line. In this particular situation, I'm going to assume that if we're talking 14 inches, there's definitely going to be some significant root disturbance there. And so, you know, I have been kind of a champion, at least for those two trees, for a long time, and I hate to give up the fight. But I can certainly focus in on the reasoning that the Tree Guild is coming forth with right now. So it's kind of with great reluctance that, you know, I can accept the recommendation that's coming forth from Kristen, who, as indicated by Councilmember Ray, she's the president of the Tree Guild. So we have the president of the Tree Guild, and I'm going to take Dave Reagan at his written word and accept his letter. I'm still uncomfortable with it, but I can see the logic here. I can also see the benefit of additional trees that would be planted out of the potential right-of-way that would happen with the widening of Halcyon, so that at a point in time when the widening of Halcyon does occur, we don't have to go through this again. So that makes a huge amount of sense to me. On the widening of Halcyon, I'm going to support staff's recommendation. I do not believe that we need to tie the widening of Halcyon to this project in particular. And if you go out there and take a look at where Halcyon is right now, we're talking about a project that is going to require some additional specific planning on just what we – that's huge. And I don't particularly want to fight those battles along with this project. I don't think we need to do that. So, yes, we can agree that those enhancements to Halcyon need to take place, but I do not believe they should be tied to this project. So I'm going to go with staff's recommendation tonight. Without the inclusion of the widening of Halcyon, again, with great reluctance and probably a tear back in there somewhere. I hate to lose those two trees. Okay, so those are my comments. Any other questions, comments?
I have some additional comments.
Okay.
Based on your comments, I just want to point out this issue of root disturbance. We have sidewalks in which we go and plane the roots of trees all the time so that we can flatten the sidewalks. Root disturbance in and of itself is not a determiner as to whether we keep a tree or not. So for us to make the judgment that because we're having some sort of root disturbance that the viability is all of a sudden gone for these trees is a pig in a poke for me, because there's not a construction site we have in the city that doesn't have some sort of root disturbance for the trees that we're even trying to save, and that we have mitigation measures during construction. Even those trees have root disturbance. So I just want to be clear that the idea that we have root disturbance at a low level doesn't necessarily in and of itself mean that the tree's viability is gone. We definitely have a difference of opinion on that issue, but I this is an important issue going forward, so I hope that when we're talking about this going forward that we use the same standard that you're talking about tonight, because it seems to me like we're applying two different standards for this site versus other sites. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thanks for the comments, Tim. Understood.
I have a question for you, Tony. You didn't comment on that center tree. Do you have a comment about that?
I don't like the center tree.
Okay.
I think we need as much open space in that parking lot as we can get. Having operated a myriad of vehicles in a police parking lot for 20 years, I can tell you that the positioning of equipment sometimes is unpredictable. The necessity to move around that parking lot and also get out and get in quickly is also a factor. And anything that we put in the way of that is, in my mind, hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Good luck with your fantasy football team there, Mr. Atkinson.
Okay, that takes us to item 11, new business. 11A is consideration of a revised memorandum of understanding between the City of Arroyo Grande, Lushimar Unified School District, J.H. Land Company, and John Taylor, trustee. This is regarding land acquisition, the extension of Castillo Del Mar Road, and the provision of water service to the Heights at Vista Del Mar.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. You have reviewed this memorandum of understanding several times in the past several years. This project has been going on for approximately a decade, and it has included some good partnerships with the school district, the developer, Mr. Taylor, and the city, in trying to look at opportunities to address some circulation deficiencies around the Arroyo Grande High School area, namely the extension of Castillo Del Mar Road behind the high school to Valley Road. The city has progressed, and the district has made has completed some of the provisions in the memorandum of understanding, namely that we've done the rezoning, the general plan amendments necessary to facilitate that road extension, rezoning some of the land behind the school district property. This district has transferred the road easement to the city, and the city has completed a portion of the bike lane improvements that the county amend their map to include additional density from 16 units that is approved to 22 units. And this and the developer is here this evening. This has to do with the viability of the project. In order to do that, the developer needs to address additional water needs. The current project is approved with a will serve letter from Rural Water Company to provide that water to the project. The county is requesting different water to be supplied to the project given the water concerns in the Napomo Mesa area. Rural Water does pump their water from the Napomo Mesa area In fact, they pump it right in the vicinity of the pumping depression. The city has had several discussions with the developer, looking at different avenues to achieve water for the project. And the MOU outlines a scenario of water supply for your consideration this evening. It includes provisions that the developer pay for water conservation offsets from projects that have been identified by previous water audits in the city. And if they achieved enough water, in fact, if they achieved a ratio of 2-to-1, that could be considered as a viable project in terms of the city providing supply to that project. In order to do that, the city would have to apply, and the developer would have to apply to the local agency formation commission for an annexation to the city's sphere of influence, which is the planning area of the city. Currently, the city's sphere includes the Fredericks Williams property only. This would extend the sphere to include this portion as well. And then an outside user agreement would be necessary for the city to supply water outside the city boundary. Given previous council direction and steps taken to this point, staff's recommending the revision to the MOU to enable the project. This graphic over here on the site plan, you can see the existing Castillo del Mar is a road that's used internally by the high school and just skirts their parking lot right now and meets up with Valley Road at the corner. This is not a good intersection, and this project would address that issue as well. The project would extend the road across to Valley Road and across this corner of John Taylor's property. This would provide the access to the project and, again, provide the circulation benefit in this neighborhood of the city. This is the proposed vesting tentative tract map with the 1022 lot configuration. Generally, this differs from the 16 lot currently entitled project in that the open space is configured in one lot consisting of the trees and the steepest portions of the site down toward the freeway and enabling a tighter configuration of lots on this portion of the site, whereas the 16 lots essentially divided the whole property up. Staff has looked at what this project would look like in comparison to the city's development standards. We have chosen a similar zoning district at the residential Hillside District, which is what the Vista Del Mar neighborhood is zoned. And density-wise, the project meets that 22-unit project. 32 units would be allowed. The lot sizes and configurations, some deviate. Some lots are a little small. Some lots are much bigger. However, the residential Hillside zoning district in the city would allow for something like this in that it allows some lot configuration deviation in order to preserve open space. In consideration of water projections, again, the 16-unit development would be served by Rural Water Company. They needed a couple offsets, again, have been identified at a 2-to-1 ratio, actually a little over. And the city has, again, identified several areas in the city where we could achieve significant water savings. We have made progress with some of those projects, And one very similar project is at Strother Park. We made projections of water savings. We conducted the project, and we've been monitoring that project to see how close our projections were. The project essentially consisted of irrigation retrofits, and that project exceeded the city's estimate in water savings and has continually exceeded those projections. So we made some very good accomplishments in water savings with those retrofits, and are proceeding to plan for such retrofits in a way, as a way to achieve additional water savings for the city. The other identified projects include the Arroyo Grande Cemetery, Ocean View School, Paulding School, and those three projects were analyzed previously and analyzed again in comparison to Strother Park and in terms of, again, projected water savings. Those projections came close but did not achieve the full 2-to-1 offset that would be required for this project. A fourth project could be included, which would be the Rancho Grande Park. If that project is included, we could conservatively come up with more than a 2-to-1 offset for the project's water demand. Again, we feel pretty good about these numbers. We had them analyzed by our water consultant, independent water consultant, Water Systems Consulting, who went through these Sprinkler King projections, water retrofits plan for each different area that has been identified, and we feel fairly conservative in those. Those are projected to be over $90,000, and that money would go toward projects to achieve additional water savings. And again, we established a 2-to-1 ratio just to be conservative in those numbers. So we don't want to just achieve the exact number or close to the number that would be required for the project demand. We'd certainly want to be comfortable and add a buffer to that, and there's where we came up with the 2-to-1 ratio of savings. In order to look at and analyze the appropriateness of amending the city's sphere of influence to serve the project, again, the city has asked for the developer to submit pre-application materials to the city so we can examine the project and analyze independently the impacts of the project, and are proceeding to do that. However, at this point in time, we've concluded that generally the project, again, meets density requirements, would fit fairly well with our residential hillside zoning requirements. It would have very similar characteristics of the Vista Del Mar neighborhood in the city, but with some larger lot sizes, providing a transition to the county developed lands to the south. And we have been in contact with county staff in their analysis of the project to ensure that appropriate conditions of approval would be included in their approval documents that would satisfy any city concerns. For example, should the city provide water service to the project, they would have to provide an upgrade to the booster station there to enable our water service. So tonight we are recommending that the council approve the amended memorandum of understanding that outlines those provisions, and adopt a resolution that would approve initiation of the procedure to come up with a project demand number for water. The developer, looked at what the county would require, which would be essentially landscape limitations, because that's where you're going to achieve your biggest water savings. And in this case, it would be a 1,200 square feet of landscaped area with a 300 square foot turf limitation. So this is what's being required for projects here and in other areas of the state where they're having to conserve water. So it's certainly a change from the large lawn areas typical past developments. So you're going to see some very different landscape, but native, native materials used in landscape and low water use. And that's what would be required for this project, and that's where you're reducing your water demand number significantly from, for example, from other older developments that have been approved in the Napomo area that use lots of water.
So would that show up later in CCNRs as well?
Yes, that would show up in conditions for the project. There are several scenarios where this could be worked out. We would have to examine this carefully. LAFCO would also be interested in making sure there's instruments provided that would ensure this water savings over time. Things like submeters for irrigation. Things like HOA monitoring, things like different audit controls, and such things are being looked at everywhere and are becoming more conventional now than ever before. So there's certainly some work to be done in order to really hone in and guarantee those water savings, but we feel that there's avenues to do that.
Okay, thank you. And then I asked the question prior to the meeting, but happening because of the open space, but at the same time, that open space really is, there's not a whole lot we can do with that anyway, and so it seems like we're creating a whole lot of legally non-conforming lots, and it seems like the zoning it doesn't sound right to me. So maybe you can help me understand why we're doing that when most of these or many of these lots don't meet that criteria.
Again, this is better matches some of the county's zoning districts. However, the overriding concerns here are density and lot configuration in terms of the topography at the site and preservations of the most sensitive areas of the site, which is the tree groves and the steep hillsides.
So this is a function then of density, not necessarily of the shape of the lot?
Yes. We do allow, either through our PUD process, generally it's that, deviations so that you don't have a cookie-cutter development on a steep hillside, the sensitive areas. And you'll see some of these lots do have, lots of angles to them, certainly not a straight square. It's in front of you. And that is to fit the project site within the topography that they have to work with. Again, meeting city's density and generally speaking, the lot configuration similar to the adjacent neighborhood.
Okay. And so, that was my next question is I obviously can't go walk the site and see what those configurations are. So this is more or less, I know up in phase one, there are some really wildly varying lot sizes there. And so is it going to be very similar to that? So that'll just be carried right through, or is this smaller overall, or how does that compare?
You can kind of see a little bit of Vista Del Mar right here. So you can see some of those lots, you know, lot configurations. It's similar as you start progressing through the site, and then it varies up in here with some larger lots and maybe some smaller lots here where you run into some drastic topography changes. So I would say it, you know, especially in this end of the site, it's a very similar character and changes a little bit as you progress toward the county lands, mostly larger lot sizes. And then, of course, when you get to the county, you have much larger lot sizes. So it does
where we've got, I think, the number 7 lots that are substantially thinner. What was that number when it was 16? Was it 6 lots? And so we're really only changing that by 1 lot? Or it makes it look like a much more drastic change on here because we don't have the shift from 16 to 22. We have a shift just of 22.
The 16 lot, the applicant can maybe actually address that in more detail. The 16 lot, I really hadn't looked too much at that because it was approved by the county and approved a long time ago. We didn't need to amend our sphere for that.
Well, maybe I'll ask the applicant.
The 16 lots carved up the property and used the property up in private lots and roads, mm-hmm. So that open space was included in the private lot. So it would have met our standards better in terms of each lot size because there were bigger lots.
Okay.
But I would add that we're not approving this project tonight. So this is a county in the county's jurisdiction that will be subject to their rules and procedures and findings for approval. An EIR has been certified for the site for the 16 unit development, and then additional environmental review will ensue at the county level for this project. So we are certainly not approving this project tonight. We are looking at an amendment to the MOU, again, to provide water to the site, water service to the site.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was taken aback at first, and then I thought, now, wait a minute, this isn't as bad as it looks. why aren't we recommending access out to the south? I understand that that's going to be kind of like what we did up on Miller Way, and there's some pretty serious circulation issues by the high school, which is why we want the Castillo del Mar. And so it seems to me very logical to be able to go out that way and relieve some of the pressure of the traffic going to the south and out Los Barros. So can you comment on that?
Well, we do have emergency access there.
No, I want, like, residential access.
Well, that's one of the other options they had pursued. I mean, the reasons they're paying so much money to us to get through the city is that there was a number of problems in getting the approval to go that direction. The other things from an environmental standpoint, I think the county and the results of the...
Yes, essentially the applicant is asking for those additional units, and the county will not allow service from rural water for the additional units.
Okay, so I want to move to a different subject, and I mentioned this briefly to Steve, and we haven't had a chance to talk since, I don't know when it was, but the ag mitigation issue. Can you go over with me what the general plan says about what ag mitigation needs to be?
Ag mitigation is up to a 2-to-1 ratio of land to be conserved for agricultural purposes or an in-lieu fee to use that for agricultural purposes. And the land preference is in the city and then immediately adjacent to the city.
Doesn't have to be an identifiable piece of property to preserve in order to move forward? Because I know we have some other issues that have come up before. I know Cherry Lane, there was an issue of a payment that got tossed out because of that issue. There was a rather substantial payment made or offered that never went through. So I guess what I'm asking is, my memory is that it has to be a, it's not enough just to take an in-lieu payment. We need to have an identifiable project to preserve. Otherwise, we're not actually doing preservation.
I would have to refresh my memory on the exact wording. Certainly, the preference is a comparable, you know, you're looking to not lose your most sensitive agricultural lands. But there is a kind of a sequence there, you know, preference being land within the city, preference being land within immediate borders of the city, and then preference being land within the areas and area of environmental concern for the city.
I kind of know where you're going on that. The other issue that came up, or at least talked about in the staff report, was the initial MOU had a payment of $200,000 towards ag mitigation, and then the high school supposedly said, well, we're going to preserve half acre, so therefore the payment only needs to be half that. There's nothing in the MOU doing that, but in terms of actually as a legal mechanism, I don't see anything in the MOU that says that's what's happening.
We can look directly at the MOU language, but what the instrument is an ag conservation easement that is would be required for that portion of the Taylor property. And that's in the files and prepared, but can't be approved until the purchase takes place.
But
the instrument to make sure
that
is required is the ag conservation easement that would be placed on the property.
And that would be placed on it before it was transferred to the district? Because once it's transferred, we have no control.
The sequencing, I think we'll have to verify in the MOU.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I think we're still looking for that. We'll come back to that. Councilmember Guthrie?
Well, I'll probably interrupt that search here. Okay, I'd actually well, embarrassed to admit that I kind of assumed that we were going to move right through the sphere of influence and into annexation here. And now I realize that we're going to leave this in the county and we're just going to provide water. So I guess my first question is the $90,000 you referred to is actually an impact fee that we normally, you know, for development that takes place within our city. How do we now reach outside the city and collect an impact fee?
So we have tossed around various scenarios for sequencing of this project, but essentially this does indeed lay groundwork for potential annexation. The first step of that would be a sphere of influence amendment. And the scenario then, you know, obviously the crucial part of this is cooperation with the county in that we would need them to include whatever conditions we need applied to the project. The probable scenario is that the project is considered at the county level and again subject to their review and environmental review and approval findings. That if that goes through and the map is indeed amended and they get a subdivision map approval, the condition would be the project is amended to our sphere, an outside user agreement is approved, building permit issuance.
So the sort of the flip side of that is if the applicant were to choose not to pursue annexation, we wouldn't get the $90,000.
Well, that we would have to negotiate with the county to include those such conditions that we would want included in the project, and they are very sensitive to the city's needs. Obviously, these impacts are going to be borne by the city. Traffic impacts, water use, utilities, it's all city impacts. And we would anticipate that LAFCO especially will be very interested in constructing the sphere amendment and outside user agreement amendment so that the annexation could proceed.
I guess I'm asking the difference between could, would, or would be required. And And again, there are other impact fees as well. Maybe I should be directing this more towards Tim. I'm sorry I didn't bring this up earlier, but it only came up because I just assumed we were going to annexation, that was part of the deal.
So, yeah, impact fees, traffic impact again, fees, all those impact fees. The in-lieu fee for the water neutralization is actually in the MOU agreement.
So the $90,000, at least the water
MOU considers the water service.
You know, and excuse me, because I missed the beginning of this trying to find some stuff in the MOU. Were you talking specifically about which impact fees? Are you talking about all impact
fees? The water neutralization impact fee that adds up to $90,000, which is an impact fee that we impose on people who are already have an entitlement.
Right.
But we recognize we have to grow water.
Well, there is a provision in there dealing with all impact fees, not just neutralization fees. That's E5E says, JH Land Partnership agrees to pay city all normal development impact and permit fees associated with the development of the tract. So it's very broad. It's an interesting issue because when you play out the timing, there are a lot of permutations that you could run through. But the bottom line is it's required.
Have we ever done this before?
No.
And there is some recent, I think it's actually the Supreme Court decision that basically, you know, deals very directly with requirements not directly related to the project, not directly related to the project impacts.
There are, of course, factually they're completely dissimilar to what's before you. This is an agreement to a clear conclusion before we're faced with the permutations that we're going through, and that is timing-wise, what happens if the county approves it? The county approves the final map. You know, at what point do you pay? Normally, you don't pay until you're actually built, until you pull permits. That's the trigger that most entities have, is to say we're not going to give you any permits, building permits, until you pay our impact fees. So at that point in time, it becomes critical. The way I look at it, if this thing's annexed into the city before any permits are pulled, and this is where we'll have to negotiate, then the city's going to get the impact fees because the city issues the building permits. And the county can say all day, we're not going to issue permits, but if the county has no permit issuance authority because it's not in their jurisdiction, it's kind of superfluous to say you owe us fees. I guess the bottom line is this issue is going to have to be dealt with through LAFCO early in the process, directly with the applicant. But again, it's unambiguous in saying they're paying our impact fees. The impacts are going to be felt by the city. All utilities will be provided by the city. Impacts from traffic are city impacts. Little doubt that the nexus is there. This is a city impact project.
Kind of the approach of this puts the burden on the developer to have to go back and work with the county so that they don't have to end up paying the county's fees and our fees. Now, we're going to help out. We've already reached out to the county. We're going to be meeting with the county and hopefully work that out. If it's the kind of thing that gets tangled up where the timing is, it's kind of coming forward, you know, with the county right at the same time that they're about to issue permits. It may come down to a negotiation with us of the county where we, you know, have to work and share some of those things. But it's something we'll coordinate with the county, but under this agreement, they're required to do it.
And if for some reason they weren't required by the county, could we then not do the road? Could we not provide them access? I mean, if we know, we've been through this a lot. This is, you know, we've been around this merry-go-round a whole bunch of times now, and every time we're a little bit farther behind. And we've already provided the upgrade in zoning to the city, to the school district, a requirement that we're going to have to fulfill. We've done some of the drainage work. There's been a whole series of things, and now we have just another piece. So what I'm wondering, we were told, for instance, that if it didn't work out, we could probably rezone the school district property. As it turns out, because we went through too many of these loops, we can't do that now. So I understand we can't. So I'm just wondering what kind of protection do we have here if in fact we come down to this negotiation and, oh, it's just one more thing, and it's the impact fees.
You put it in your sphere of influence, that's your probable growth boundaries for 20 years. In this case, it's, you know, it's right there. It's very easy.
The MOU isn't requiring annexation. That we don't. Well, okay, it wasn't in the staff report then. Okay, let me move on to another question. That question, and this is, have we talked to LAFCO staff about whether they consider this conserved water real water? And I say this in light of the Pismo Beach decision, which frankly was a much bigger decision. It was 200 acre feet versus 7 or 15 or whatever we're talking about here. where LAFCO basically said state water wasn't a dependable source and therefore you couldn't transfer it. Have we talked to LAFCO about, do they consider water conservation measures and I don't mean the ones in the park, I mean the ones on the land that take it from whatever it would be to 7 acre feet. Have we talked to LAFCO about their position on that?
We have talked to LAFCO on a couple different occasions. You know, this has not been before the LAFCO board, so I do not know what the LAFCO board will say when the outside user agreement and the sphere amendment comes before them first. However, LAFCO staff is understanding what the intention is and is very interested in making sure that the water audits and the water demand and supply balance is carefully worked out. And, you know, I think this actually differs from other, you know, water battles perhaps that have been before LAFCO in that we really do have demonstrated water savings here. And we've developed a conservative scenario for this water supply, remembering that this project is an entitled 16-unit project that would be served by rural water already. Rural water, again, pumping from an area of the aquifer that we're uninterested in seeing additional pumping occur. This project, if served by the city, would be a water conservation project in its design and conditions, and it would be served by city water, which would be again a mixture of groundwater and surface water that, you know, we're always continuously monitoring the best proportions.
This was just to brainstorm and be creative in terms of what would be the best way to make this whole thing work. And they were the ones that urged the most that this should go into the city sphere and the city should be one of the ones to serve them. That's kind of how we ended up where we are now, and this was the best solution that we could come up with to make it work.
LAFCO considers potential conservation more as more sure than state water, which is an interesting position. So let me just ask my final question is, we did the original studies on water conservation at Paulding, Ocean View, and the cemetery as well. So those were actually projects that we sort of had in our pipeline, so to speak, of things that we intended to do at some point.
That's correct. They haven't come to fruition for various reasons in terms of, you know, agreement and partnerships, but I believe all projects are very viable at this point in time.
Okay. And then Rancho Grande Park is just something we studied recently. We hadn't looked at that before, or did I misunderstand?
It's also been considered in the past, and we've gone back and taken a close look at it again. Comfortable in additional water savings, certainly at Rancho Grande Park. I will add, just to answer the questions, Section 4P is the section in the MOU that requires agricultural conservation easement. Councilman Brown, and Section 5B actually specifies all water-associated costs and fees.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem, you had a question?
Yeah, I just have a quick question, but a comment first. I noticed 5D also says that upon LAFCO approval of the water agreement amendment of the city's SOI, the city shall expeditiously process an application with LAFCO to annex the property. So we're agreeing to annex the property already. Now, who's providing sewage service to this project as it's proposed right now with 22 units? Is it septic?
It would be the South County Sanitary District that would.
County
this project.
To the district, otherwise it's not going to happen. So is there something specific in the MOU about timing?
It goes without saying, the easement has to be imposed before we transfer it, or we couldn't depose the easement.
It goes without saying.
Yeah, we'd have to impose the conservation easement while we own the property. We have to encumber that property as a part of the transfer.
So you're
the answer to the question is yes.
You're saying we're going to do it before we transfer, but why is that why does that not need to be spelled out?
The only way you can legally impose an easement on a piece of property.
I know, but what if we don't do it, I guess is my question. Is there anything in the MOU that says this will get done?
We can spell it out.
What?
We can spell it out, but again, that's how easements work.
I understand your point, okay? I get it. But I guess what I'm trying to say is it needs to be spelled out in my mind just to make sure that it gets done. I'm afraid it may not get done. That's all. It's a one-sentence thing. It'll be done prior to the transfer. I'm just afraid it'll get overlooked, and it won't happen. That's my concern.
I think council can direct us to add that. I don't think there would be any objection from any of the parties involved.
I understand your point, Tim, that it can't. It's got to be encumbered first. But I just want to make sure that it's anyway. I'm beating a dead horse, but
I think they got the message.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I had a question about annexation versus fear of influence and why we weren't going for it. That question has been answered. I had a question about the groundwater management, us versus rural water. That's been answered. And I wanted to make sure we had closure on the point that Councilmember Brown raised with regard to the school district. And I am convinced that somewhere along the line that's been answered. So so those were the three things. Once again, this is not a public hearing, but we would appreciate some public input if there are any, and I'm assuming there are representatives from the applicant in the audience, and we'd like to give them first shot.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. First thing I'd like to do is thank staff, number one, for bringing us forward here to ask for your consideration, Taylor's property, and complete the road. Since that time, the market conditions, of course, have made this development financially unviable. However, recently, a little opening, a little crack there in the market, the conditions have shown some increase, allowing us to move forward again. In an attempt to lessen the financial burden, we applied to the county to increase the number of lots from 16 that was previously approved on a vesting tentative map to 22 lots, while staying within the same building envelope. We were able to show the county that we would not create any additional impacts, thus requesting a new tentative map for the 22 lots. The county's response focused on water usage. We would be required to show no additional usage from 16 to 22 lots. Rural Water was able to provide a will serve for us for 22 lots, but had no way to mitigate for the additional use. That is why we're here this evening. We are requesting that the city annex us into your sphere to provide water for the development with an outside users agreement. We have agreed to mitigate the water consumption for the development of 22 lots by 2-1, and additionally to provide the improvements necessary to deliver the water. However, we request an amendment to the MOU that has been provided for payment of the 2-1 mitigation upon approval by LAFCO or the county. We're requesting a letter of intent which we could provide to the county to continue our process. Although we would be amending the existing MOU, it would not change the final date that is required to close the purchase of the agricultural piece from Mr. Taylor. We have been in escrow with Mr. Taylor for some time, and have paid for extensions during this period. However, the drop-dead date is the end of February of 2014, so we do have a time restriction. If we are unable to meet that date, the development would be unable to move forward. We are so close to completing. It would provide the road, allow our development to go forward, and we are asking for your support in this matter. I do have Cindy Chambers with me this evening from Wallace Group to hopefully answer any technical questions. And again, appreciate your listening to us and thank you for your consideration.
Any questions before he walks away? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, dollars worth of water for that cemetery. Last year, our highest bill was $14,000 for one billing period. So it's incredibly important that we start to save this money because a lot of the people that live there are on fixed incomes, I guess you could say. It's very difficult to go back and people that have been buried there in previous centuries and try to collect additional monies to try to pay for the operation of that cemetery. So I say that somewhat jokingly, but very seriously. We have no additional funding that we can go after. So anything that that we can do as a partner with the city and certainly with the developers is going to be very appreciated by us at the cemetery district, which is, by the way, a special district of the county of San Luis Obispo, an actual government agency. Thank you very much for entertaining my input.
Thanks, Terry. It's good to know your sense of humor is intact. Anyone else who would like to come forward on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. And we'll bring this back to the council. We'll start on my right this time with Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I guess let me just ask one quick question of staff. Maybe this is directed at Steve. I know some years ago we actually offered the cemetery a very similar retrofit program, and they, from our retrofit funds, and they declined it at that time. Would those funds still be available today?
It would be the program, and, you know, it's a policy decision. Council can always change it. The program the city offers is normally a 75% reimbursement of the costs. So one of the incentives for the cemetery to participate in this particular transaction is they would get 100% of their costs reimbursed.
But if we chose to, we could do 100% as well.
If you change the program.
So let me just start off with the things that I like about this. One, I do, and I'm glad we clarified annexation, though I'm still a little uncomfortable about a outside user agreement and annexation kind of used in the same sentence. But I do think for a number of reasons annexation here is actually an appropriate way to go. I'll explain what the problems I have with that. But since we're going to provide the services, clearly it's right on our edge, and as staff pointed out, it fits our footprint, if you will, of the way the city's laid out. The problem I have here with annexation is, of course, that we're now taking on the liability of providing water for this project. And I started with two really fundamental problems. The first has to do with the projected use. I've read the report, and if this was a commercial project or it was a public space or something like that, I would have some confidence that some of these things would work. As we've demonstrated in the park, we have shown significant savings when we're in control. When it's a residential, you have far less confidence. Once we agree to do this, whether it's 7 acre feet or 25 acre feet, we're going to be on the hook. We and our water payers are going to be on the hook to provide that water. For the publics who haven't read the study, the study actually was comparing this to Falcon Ridge, and then sort of backing their numbers down from there. And they're basically showing a 68% reduction in water usage based on these provisions, going from 1.1 acre feet per lot to 0.35. They are smaller lots, but they're still very big lots. I think probably our projection of 15 acre feet that we use in our general plan is probably a lot closer to what will actually be used. I just am not comfortable in trusting that will in fact be the number, and we have almost no enforcement mechanism here. We don't have a really great history of going out and reducing water usage through enforcement even during drought periods. Um, The other thing that I have trouble with here is the second part of this, which is our 2-to-1 water replacement. The intent here is that we would not burden the city with the requirement to go out and get additional water. We are, in fact, already, 100, 150 acres short. And this, to me, is clearly water that if we wanted to, we could go out and save today at relatively low prices. You know, this is a relatively, conservation is by far the most inexpensive way to do it. This is basically every big project in the city that I think is out there that we would be throwing into this pot. All the easy stuff would be right here. And we would be using up our most direct and best potential conservation measures and then giving up half of it. Giving up half of it in order to permit this to take place. I understand the trade-off here. The trade-off is that we want this road and the circulation. But in my mind, this does not meet the intent. We're basically taking water that's available to us. That if we were to go and offer the cemetery district and the school district, I'm confident that we could get them to allow us to spend money on their property to save them money on water. Why the cemetery district turned this down before, I'm not sure, but I doubt it was the 25%. But if that's what it took to get this kind of savings, then that's what we should do. That said, I voted for. I do think this is the road improvement is a nice improvement. I don't think it's not Briscoe Road or something, but it certainly would be a nice improvement to accomplish around the high school. I voted for this MOU, I think 6 times. But I think we're probably, for me, this is a step too far for a number of reasons, and the primary one being water and being the cost of water. When we go back, the reason that I requested the staff report on state water is the state water report basically said that we'd be paying $25,000 to $30,000 per acre foot for state water. And this is water that we're ultimately, somewhere, we're going to have to make up this 7-acre feet or 15-acre feet or 20-acre feet, whatever it is, that the ratepayers of Arroyo Grande right now are ultimately going to have to make up. They're going to have to find us somewhere because we're not going to make it up. We're giving up the easy path through conservation. We're either going to have to make it through much more aggressive conservation measures with residents, or we're going to have to go out and buy additional very expensive water. I compare this to a very similar deal we did, which was a trade of residential for a road, which was Grace Lane. I think if we revisit that project, they actually did that project exactly as proposed. We said, we'll give you 12 units or 14 units, I've forgotten which it was. You build the road, you build this collector road so that we can bypass Rodeo Road. And in the world of unintended consequences, here we are today with the insistence that it's not a collector road, that it's now a residential road, and we're trying to reduce its speeds down to 25 miles an hour. So I'm not even as confident that the circulation program will work the way we want it to. What happens when a whole bunch of people start driving down, is it Orchard, and across this and start traveling through this neighborhood? Are we going to have the same kind of issues that we have now with Grace Lane? So I'm not as confident that one, the road's such great, that the road's worth $600 to us, what would actually be $400,000 or $500,000 that I believe will ultimately have to pay for new water. So the last thing I want to address is this rural water versus city water, rural water has a bad reputation, but ultimately this comes down to how much water are the 22 residents or the 22 houses in this tract going to use. Whether it's supplied by rural water or whether it's supplied by us. Maybe we're going to be better stewards. Maybe we're going to be more aggressive and enforce rules better than the county would. But ultimately, that's what it is. It's us enforcing these rules, not versus really the county enforcing them. It's got nothing to do with rural water. Rural water would love to pump the water, but if they ask for it, they'll get it. And the same thing, if they ask for it from us, they'll get it. We can't deny them. And I just point out, these are very big lots. It's going to be very expensive homes. This is not a a populace that's going to be affected by tiered rates or, you know, us going and knocking on their door and asking them to change their lifestyle. This is going to be a difficult enforcement issue, and that's one of the reasons why I highly doubt the conservation that's been proposed here. So I understand that everybody would prefer that the city has a more responsible party than rural water. But in the end, it comes down to how much water is being used on the land, no matter who's supplying the water. And I don't think we should take on that liability. I think it's a huge liability. And like I said, I think it could easily be $400,000 worth of water we're buying at some point in order to make up for the water that we're giving away tonight. So I'm not in favor of extending the MOU.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Ray.
Okay, I'm still processing what Councilmember Guthrie said. Would it be okay if I take a pass for a minute? Because I'm honestly really processing.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This water issue's been on my mind, and I've been on the fence on this issue for a while. And I think Councilman Guthrie's right about the easy pickings regarding conservation. I'm not sure I agree with the idea that once we conserve that water, we're still going to have to go find it somewhere else, which is what he seems to be saying. But I do agree with his idea that we're using this project. We're basically coming up with the water for this project using all the best conservation places we have within the city. And that concerns me going forward for other projects that might come. That being said, I do think the road's important. I originally was concerned that the developer's water use wasn't independently verified, and it seems based on the staff report that it actually was, and so that answered one of my questions. And for me, the other issue was the dead horse I was kicking. I just think that the conservation issue, this is important how we handle this, because we have other projects within the city that are going to come forward, and if we don't process those in the way that the general plan intended, and we don't do it that way now, there's no reason the future developer shouldn't come forward and say, well, you didn't do it the correct way before, you didn't do it this way before, why should I be held to a different standard? So I'm concerned that we're getting a certain amount of money, and I appreciate the developer's willingness to do that by all means, but I think from our standpoint, we should have some identifiable project, or we should at least be in the process of identifying some identifiable project to use that money for. Otherwise, it's not really doing what it's intended to do. So those are my concerns, but having said that, as long as staff realizes, particularly regarding the ag mitigation issue, what my concern is and what we should be doing moving forward on that issue, despite my reservations regarding the water issue, I'm willing to move forward.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. All set to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, Councilmember Ray.
There was math I was doing in my head, and I was trying to figure out why I wasn't wrapping my head around that properly. I think that it's important to recognize that they're already conditioned and they're already approved to get 5.54 acre feet for the 16 lot development. So the change here is 2.07 acre feet. And then we double that because it's the 2-to-1. So that's what I was trying to do the math. I was trying to figure out, what are we really talking about as far as Councilmember Guthrie put it, sacrificing. And so I'm much more comfortable with the smaller addition because they're already conditioned and it's not entitlement, but it's similar. With regard to this idea that we're giving away the best and easiest projects, well, I don't mean to sound disrespectful when I say this, but of course we are. That's the order that we do things. And this project is here, and those are the things that are first in line. And I don't see wisdom in basically what we would be doing is playing favorites with developments. And if we don't have an identifiable recipient isn't the right word, but beneficiary for that conservation, then it seems to me that we should be going ahead and allowing this conservation to happen, especially with considering what Terry said from the cemetery district that doing it now is going to help them, and doing it 2 months from now makes a massive difference. So I don't see a huge amount of wisdom in waiting so that we could apply that to something else. Let's get the savings now. With regard to rural water versus whether or not the city is going to serve this water, first of all, if we're going to take control, if we're going to essentially be serving this in, I guess what I'm trying to say is we're going to be serving this in either case, because the issue that we're having with rural water is essentially that we're going to end up serving it anyhow. And I'm talking about the actual aquifer, not the rural water versus Arroyo Grande water. We're all in the same adjudicated basin, and we may be having a reversal going on, and we've got all kinds of other issues here. And so I would much rather have that in our possession and in our control than to allow rural water to do whatever service they want to do, and that ultimately will affect us anyway. So I like the idea of this coming into our sphere of influence and then annexation. It doesn't make any sense to me to have it in our sphere of influence and not annex it and go that extra step. So I'm certainly in favor of going forward. Again, I'm okay with the identified recipients for the conservation efforts. And I'm also okay with the 2-to-1 mitigation, basically because I'm, like Councilmember Guthrie, I'm not buying the 7 acre feet. I think it's going to be at least half again more than that, especially because we really can't control what individual homeowners are doing in reality. So to me, a 2-to-1 is a straight up 1-to-1. So I'm okay with that the way it is. And so that I can move forward with this tonight. And I'm glad that this project, which has been in the pipeline for a long time, just on behalf of the developers, I'm glad that you're finally going to be able to hopefully move forward.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mayor Pro Tem.
I understand where Councilmember Guthrie's coming from in terms of this. If we take a look at it, what we're saying is that each of these lots is going to use 329 gallons per day. That's what it works out to. If they're using 0.35 acre feet per year per lot. So that's, if two people live in a house, that's 164 gallons per person per day. And I think we're just a little bit over that right now. We're more like 180. So if you go to 180, it's actually going to come out to be 12.64 acre feet that we're going to use for this project. I'm not going to repeat what my colleagues have said about the difference between rural water and our water. Ultimately, the people that use the water are going to end up having to pay for the water. And if they don't conserve, and I encourage the CCNRs that go with this, whatever regulations, I encourage them to be as stringent as possible. But if people don't conserve water, they're going to end up paying for it. And, you know, we'll share that burden with the entire city. This is not a big enough issue for me to not go forward with this tonight. We've been working on this for a long time. The benefits of having the road go through are clear. I don't think there's any question, but this property is going to be annexed into the city. I mean, if either we go forward with it and it gets annexed or we don't, and it dies and comes back in another reincarnation, 15 or 18 or 20, and the county goes forward, and it's still going to have the use of the water there, and they're drawing out of the same aquifer. I think we have a little bit more control with this. So I'll support this tonight, and I'll go forward with it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, a lot of my questions and concerns have already been addressed one of the benefits about going last, but I did want to make a couple of observations. First of all, I think overall, talking philosophically, I've got a good deal of faith in our ability to enact and abide by conservation measures. If you look at where we were in our gentleman's agreement a couple of years ago, we were getting close to what, maxing out 99%, 98% of our groundwater allocation coming out of the gentleman's agreement. We put some stringent conservation measures in place, and I think we dropped, 20 percentage points at least. I'm looking at the new technology that's out there right now. I'm sure the cemetery district will be employing some of that, as well as some of the other locations. All of that's in our favor. So I'm pretty confident that that in terms of overall water usage, those conservation measures are going to work in our favor. I'm much more comfortable, as has been stated already, with the management of our groundwater basin as relates to our abilities versus Rural Water Company. I don't know much about them, but the thing that obviously concerns me, I think years ago, when I think it was Supervisor Bianchi then on the Board of Supervisors was talking about, or she was addressing a project where there were many users accessing the same groundwater basin, and she talked about dipping straws in the same soda drink, and that's essentially what we have there. What comes out of those straws is vitally important. And the degree to which we have the ability to manage that volume through whatever mitigation measures we're going to put in place here, and I trust staff being mindful, particularly after the substance of this discussion, is going to put their best foot forward. I think out of all of the discussion from staff, reinforced by the applicant, the most important thing that was said tonight was the fact that this is a step in a very long process, and we're moving it to a conclusion for all of the reasons that we have identified many, many times in terms of levying importance on circulation and the connecting road. I understand the concerns that Councilmember Brown had, and I would support any teeth that we can put in this to ensure the intended use of that parcel that we're cutting out of John Taylor's property. From the very beginning, and I met out there physically on site a couple of times with representatives from the school district and from the applicant and all of the other stakeholders. And in fact, the school district representatives took us on a short tour of their current agricultural classroom area, which consists of an asphalt lot, a small classroom, and elevated tables that you would find at a nursery with planter boxes on top of those tables. Nowhere did they have actual land that they could use for teaching purposes. And they were just ecstatic about the potential for this to take place, because they could now physically, in a manner similar to what Cal Poly does and what some of the other higher learning centers do with their ag departments, they could actually grow crops in a manner consistent, once again, with how they are grown commercially. So there is no more valuable teaching mechanism, in my view, as it relates to agriculture. So I was very happy to see that commitment. But that commitment aside, it's one thing to have a spoken word. It's another one to have it written down. And so I'm in favor of doing whatever we can to put some teeth in that. Once again, I'm in favor of annexing this property. It makes no sense to me to pursue sphere of influence without pursuing annexation as well. I don't know what the difference in the timeline is. I know it's written down there that that's our ultimate goal. I just as soon expedite that. The impacts are in our jurisdiction. One of the other nice things about that is that we would get to include the housing units in our general plan housing element. And I'm not certain we can do that, even if it's just in our sphere, if it's outside the city limits. But we made all kinds of commitments to HCD, even though it's technically non-binding. We had to plan to do it, not actually build it. But it would be nice to show that we were influential, if not the key originators of additional housing that we could include in our housing element. So I think that's a plus. All in all, getting back to the most important thing that was said this evening was the fact that there was a recognition that this is another step in the process and that there was a meeting of all of the stakeholders. And to me, that shows, and there were commitments made as a result of those meetings. That's extremely valuable. It's that process that allows us to get things done. And so that's what I'm looking at in terms of maybe labeling this whole process, is moving it forward and getting it done, and having everybody on the same sheet as we do it. So I'm going to support this this evening. I'm happy with staff's recommendation and hope to get this thing moving as soon as possible. So those are my comments, and with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make some additional comments, if I could.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple of quick things. Been kicking dead horses all night, so this is my turn. First, I want to point out that we could actually do this right now. We do have the money. We do have the technology. We could actually
do what?
Do the conservation measures. Yeah. In fact, we should have. Why are we actually coming to this conclusion being driven by a development project? The second point I want to make is that this is not a project that's entitled within the city. It's not the same as the other projects that Councilman Brown was referring to. They already have an entitlement, and we have a responsibility to provide that to them. So this is different. This is an additional entitlement that the city's taking on. As far as the per-person use, I just want, it's petty, but these are large lots, so it's not going to be an average per-person use. It's clearly related to the size of the lot. We know from our studies that, in fact, larger lots use significantly more water. And finally, on the rural water deal, the fact that we feel like we're in control, I'm not sure proves anything. If rural water is as out of control as we think they are, we've actually just taken on their responsibility and freed them. I've forgotten what the number was, but we freed them to say, hey, we now have, three or four more acre feet of water that we can reallocate to somebody else. Yes, they're not supposed to under the agreement, but they've been doing it ever since. And in fact, we're handing them we're handing them the logic to say that they can, in fact, go out and entitle some other project at this point. So I really think it's kind of backwards logic to think that we're somehow controlling rural water by taking on their water liability. So those are just a few points I wanted to finish with there. I still won't be supporting it this evening.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anything else? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'll move that we've approved a revised memorandum of understanding between the City of Arroyo Grande, Lucia Mar School District, JH Land Company, and John Taylor Trustee regarding land acquisition, extension of Castillo Del Mar Road, and the provision of water service to the Heights at Vista Del Mar Development, and consideration of resolution to proceed with an amendment to the city's sphere of influence with the, I guess it would be an amendment that Councilmember Brown suggested for the language in the MOU.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second discussion. There's a resolution there we need to read, Tim?
There's no resolution, but I might as well just suggest the language now, and you can include it in the motion.
Okay.
For the dead horse. That's in 4P, if you could just add to the end of that sentence, which shall be created and recorded at the time of transfer of the remainder parcel to the district. I think we'll have done it.
And so my motion will include that amendment in that language.
And my second holds.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes, thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes.
Okay, so we need a separate. Go ahead. You do it.
Mr. Mayor, I move adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande approving initiation of the proceedings for the amendment of the sphere of influence.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion on this? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
No.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Moving on to item 12, City Council reports. I will go first. RTA hasn't met, but will meet on September the 4th. The Council of Governments met on August the 7th, and there's another round of regional surface transportation program money, as well as RTIP monies coming forth, Teresa, and I know you're aware of the project submittal deadlines on that, right? So we're going to be hopefully finding some projects that qualify. That grant money is going to be used for mostly congestion relief and or air quality improvements according to the conditions that are in there. So good luck with that. Caltrans gave a presentation regarding the installation of rumble strips along Highway 1. And if you recall, I know you've read in the newspaper about issues related to the chip seal along that scenic stretch of highway. And so the timing of introducing this project was probably not the best. We once again had a whole room full of cyclists, and they were concerned about it. And the rumble strip, for those of you that aren't aware of it, it's that etched strip that Caltrans is putting on the edge of the highway so that if your car veers off the road, your tires will hit that etched area and make a loud noise and rumble. And so the bicyclists were concerned about a couple of things. They were concerned about the depth of the grooves. I think for those of us that drive a lot, you realize that there are essentially two kinds of these strips. One of them are one type is deep enough so that you actually do feel a significant vibration feedback through your tires. It shakes the heck out of you, in other words. And then the other type is shallower and it produces kind of a loud whine. And they were opting for the latter so that their bicycles would not, occasionally and inadvertently hit a deeper, indentation in the pavement. And they were also concerned about where the rumble strip was going to be placed. And they were opting for the rumble strip to be actually placed in the demarcation line that separates the bike lane from the driving lane, the number two driving lane, so that it did not encroach any further into the width of the bike lane for safety reasons. That issue was a bit long and drawn out. The other thing that's going on with the COG staff is that they produced is they're going to be doing a needs assessment of all of the park and ride lots. And one of the interesting things that occurred there is that they had a matrix laid out of all of the park and ride lots in the county. And I was not aware of it, but our lot, Halcyon, is actually the largest in the county. It has the highest capacity of parking spaces. And yet it also does not have adequate lighting. It doesn't have restrooms. And the other things, it doesn't have rain shelters, at least not adequate rain shelters. So those are all of the potential enhancements that can occur. And my recommendation to staff was if Rio Grande, in fact, owns the largest park and ride lot, that perhaps that is worthy of some degree of priority in terms of where this grant money comes from. Obviously, as I've mentioned in previous reports, our ridership has gone up considerably, And so there are a lot of people there during peak hours in the morning and in the evening. So we're hoping that some of that money will come to us fairly quickly. The South County Sanitation District, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but I know you're aware of the fact that we have an interim district administrator. We also brought in an interim district engineer, and the interim district engineer is a woman by the name of Shannon Sweeney. Shannon has been absolutely amazing, and she has come up with a lot of creative thinking for the district and has resulted in significant improvements to the operation overall. It was very, very sad. Shannon is an avid cyclist, and I think over a month ago she was struck while she was riding. She is now confined to a wheelchair, and she's going through rehab up in San Jose. But her mind is still sharp, and her willingness to contribute is she still inquires about things going on in the district. We hope and pray that she'll come back to us. She's an incredibly valuable asset, and it's just so unfortunate that something like that happened. I'm sure she's not watching, but I just wanted her to know that she's in our thoughts. The reason why I think that's important is because during the plant superintendent's report, we looked at all of our discharge requirements over the summer and compared them to the same time frame in previous years. And so we're not only looking at biosolids, but we're looking at all of the other regulated discharge requirements. During this period, the plant operated better and more consistently than it has in 7 years. So we are very, very pleased with the improvements that has been made. Our chemical usage is down. The other thing that was very difficult to let go, but we saw no other way to do it, was that you've heard me report over the years on the cogen plant that allows for the use of methane to produce electricity for the plant. And as a result of that, when that element was first installed, we saw an incredible dip in our PG&E bill. Unfortunately, that the machinery was not built to specification. We didn't realize that at the time. We've had nothing but problems with it since. And in fact, I can't go into a lot of detail, but we are in a legal proceeding with the manufacturer. The bottom line for us, it's become more cost prohibitive than it has been a cost benefit. So essentially what we're doing is scrapping it. And so my question to staff was, what are we doing with the methane? Are we just going to continue to flame it off and waste that energy? And the answer is no. We've actually taken steps to now bring in a heating system. So we're going to be using the methane at the plant to heat boilers that help us with the digesters. So instead of getting a dip or savings in our electricity bill, we're going to get a dip and a savings in our gas bill. So at least now we can say that we're and we'll be able to use all of the methane, so we won't be flaming it off. I want to make a brief comment about the item that we heard during our first public comment this evening, and I can't go into a lot of detail once again because it was a closed session item. To be careful on how I say this, but there was an allegation made by one board member against a former employee and also a current employee. And as a result of that allegation, the board was going to hear the item. It clearly fell within the purview of personnel, It was absolutely, without a doubt, a closed session item. It was appropriately placed on closed session under the personnel exemption. I can't elaborate on what went on in closed session, but we did get a letter from a gentleman by the name of Kevin Rice challenging the fact that it was heard in closed session instead of open session. The letter went on to indicate that if it was not subsequently rescheduled on an agenda and heard in open session, that a complaint was going to be made to the district attorney's office for a Brown Act violation or alleging a Brown Act violation. A copy of that letter, I understand, was already sent to the district attorney. So, long story short, our district counsel contacted the district attorney, gave him all of the background information, gave him the materials, same materials the board got. The district attorney's office determined that everything was done appropriately. It was clearly a personnel issue, should have been held in closed session. And he indicated that the district attorney's office will respond to Mr. Rice to that effect. So that's pretty much the sum and substance of that issue. And I'm sorry, but I can't answer any more details about the nature of the issue. But that leads us to, I think, the other item that the speaker brought up. And I realized, Tim, that this is maybe a bit of a reach, but I don't know if we do this at some point as an agenda item, or if we can kind of get a resolution on this now, or at least a consensus. But the issue that she brought up about representatives to other boards and commissions that the council appoints from the dais here, and we all have those responsibilities. This issue came up actually at the last mayor's meeting. And we had kind of a discussion about, what authority does a representative have when they leave this dais and go sit on the COG or Zone 3 or APCD or whatever the case may be? What do we expect from them? And kind of the discussion that happened around the with all of the mayors was that there's a certain amount of autonomy that is granted to that representative to vote his or her conscience, and when they get there and get involved in an issue. The main reason why is because even though the council may be briefed up to a certain point, when that person actually physically gets into the meeting and more information surfaces through staff reports that the respective councils don't hear, that person's expected to make the best decision he or she can based on the information that's in front of them. That's why they get appointed to the board. The qualifier was that if the issue is so significant that a decision on it is going to affect the constituency of the entire council, case in point being the plastic bag rule or the dust rule or the thing that came out of the fire board on the benefit assessment district, which is going to affect virtually everybody in the city. If an issue rises to that level, then there's sort of an unwritten rule that those kinds of decisions would probably be best served coming back and at least be open for discussion on the respective councils. So that was kind of the sum and substance of how this thing was vetted at the mayor's meetings. And I kind of wanted to get your take. Is that generally how you see us operating in that regard?
It's a very good description of how I look at it. I even go a little bit further. I think you have absolute autonomy up there. I think the remedy is normally the council will either reprimand you or remove you from that position ultimately. I think it depends on the nature of the decision you're looking at. In a quasi-judicial decision, obviously, you're expected to listen carefully to all the evidence that the council is not privy to if they're not there, and make that determination based on the evidence that's before you. On legislative acts, policy issues, I think you're expected to a certain extent, to carry forth sort of the, if you understand and know what the policy decisions of the council are, you're expected to bring that forward. Again, you don't have to, and there really is very little remedy involved except for removing you, censuring you, reprimanding you. So I really do believe, aside from the fact there's a certain amount of faith that goes with appointing someone to a commission and expecting them to carry forth articulated policies of a council, they really are free to do, you know, absent the structure and the enabling legislation for that entity, do whatever they feel is appropriate. But that's layered with some common sense, and that is you're up there, and if you know exactly what your council has told you to do with regard to a specific matter, I think generally you're expected to carry that forward, and you'll find that if you don't, that you're probably not going to have an opportunity to make that decision again. Now, I know we have a policy with regard to this particular issue. Steve, while I quickly read it and absorb it, do you want to comment on it?
Yeah, I'd have to go back because I don't recall the specifics, but this did come up about, it was about a year ago, where there was some concerns on this type of thing in terms of what type of issues would we like council members to bring forward for direction. So we actually established a policy. I can distribute that again, and if you want to look over it and see if it addresses your concerns, or maybe you want to look at it and make some changes at this point.
Maybe you could send that to us again.
Yeah. I'm sure it's hazy, and it's a very detailed policy. It's actually very good, and it reflects pretty much the discussion we just had.
We had this discussion during the plastic bag issue.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, there on the fire, some of the fire budget.
I think a refresher would be good, and maybe we have it available for the public too, because you know from time to time this issue comes up.
I think it's a part of our guidelines that we always have on hand at meetings in case the public does.
Maybe we could throw something like that up on the website. I'm not sure what we put on it, but as a title, but something like that. If it's not there already. So. Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
My first issue, the Air Pollution Control District did not meet. Their last meeting, there was no quorum. I think six of us were on vacation, so no quorum, no meeting. We are going to be meeting a special meeting on September the 5th, a Thursday, to take up the business that wasn't able to be taken up. Five Cities Fire Authority has been operating as normal. Things are working well. I understand the chief is meeting individually with members of the council to discuss and educate on the benefit assessment district partial tax issue so that we'll have some sort of consensus. And then I believe he will come and present this to us at the next meeting, perhaps, I think. And then I will be looking to the council to provide guidance when I go back to the Five Cities Fire Authority. One thing, we did respond, the Five Cities Fire Authority did respond to a brush fire in the dunes, and we were the first ones in. Ended up being a little bit more complex than originally anticipated. They ended up calling in air support, which gets to be kind of expensive, but since it was not our problem, it was in the dunes, it's their problem to pay for it. So we don't bear the cost of that, although we did respond. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Guthrie?
Start with the South County Area Transit. As I've been saying a number of times, we have new buses coming. I'm glad to say they finally arrived. You may have seen them with their new logos, the new look to the bus, and they dropped the word SCAT on the South County Transit. So I'm glad to say actually one of these buses was following me today, so they finally arrived. Ultimately, there'll be four new buses. We did also, we've been working on this for the last three or four meetings, pass a passenger code of conduct. It has to do with dealing with unruly bus users. It's really a copy of what they use at RTA. There was a lengthy discussion on the reimbursement to the RTA for the time that we had to use RTA, but for how we arrived at the cost for using the RTA buses when our buses were down. The board voted unanimously in favor of staff's position there, but there was a pretty lively discussion at the previous meeting about that. We also passed the budget, and nothing really significant there. You know, certainly we're looking at, you know, quote, conservative fuel costs because they are all over the place. And we are also looking at significantly increased insurance rates, as is the city. So everybody's looking at those kind of costs. And finally, we did have the free ride in October. October was in, and was very successful and really carried through into November. And, excuse me, not October.
You're talking summer, right?
Yeah.
August.
It's a free ride. It's actually free ride for under 18. So anyway, very, very successful program this summer. And finally, we are working. We do have to get to the 20%. We have 3 years there to get to 20% fare box recovery. We're at about 16%. We're doing pretty well there and looking at some of the routes that are better than others and reviewing them. So that's my report from there. HSOC has not met since my last report.
Okay, very good. Council Member Ray.
Economic Vitality Corporation met just for social, their annual social in July, so nothing happened at that meeting, and they do not meet in August, so there's nothing to report there. Zone 3 has not met because, no, I take that back. I'm sorry. It's right in front of me. Zone 3 met on July 18th, and the biggest thing that happened there is we've been working really hard on the habitat conservation plan and had a change in key consultants, and basically the issue was that the consultants weren't doing what we asked them to do. That's the short version. And so we went through looking through the contracts, and then we are working on now coming up with an RFQ and then changing those consultants. The other interesting or unfortunate thing is we've been waiting for months and months to see if we got Prop 50 funding. We'd got denied for that. So we authorized a change in approach to a phased set of construction projects rather than doing the three that they were going to try and do through the Prop 50 funds. So that's it on those. JPIA had their annual meeting in July, which I did not attend. Karen Sisko attended, but I have not heard what happened there. I thought maybe I might get something in writing, so maybe she can email me on that. And then the Tourism Committee did meet. They reviewed the website progress, and maybe Steve can comment on that because I was unable to make that meeting.
I don't have too much to add. The council at the last meeting approved the contract with the consultant, and they're forging ahead and came up with some initial, you know, design ideas, and they all look pretty good. So everybody's pretty pleased in the progress. And given that the Business Improvement District only started in July, we're probably a month away from launching the website, and got a lot. And they're also going to be a sponsor of Saver, so we've got a lot of stuff going on considering we just got started.
Okay, and that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you very much. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Integrated Waste hasn't met. RAC did meet, and actually there was an interesting conversation over the Leticia Ag Cluster, and it's something I think we should all kind of keep one eye on. There was a discussion from a subgroup that looked at the EIR water use, and there was a determination that under the EIR that you could develop a rural water company for the houses up there and not take out any grapes out of production. And so there was a heated conversation. Of course, whenever you get 100 people in a room, that tends to happen. But under Rule 106, there's a rule called 106 that if the water company fails, the liability falls back on the winery or the grape grower to provide water for the houses. So there was a real debate about how can you build these houses and not somehow lower your water use on the rest of the property. And I don't know how that's going to turn out, but that there was a long discussion about that. And while it's not right in the city of Rio Grande, I think it's worth, just based on the issue involved, I think it's something we should all be keeping an eye on. So that's my report, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to item 13, city council member items. We have none. Item 14, city manager items. We have none indicated. Any council communication tonight?
Just real quick, just reminding you, Steve, that I'm going to miss the meeting on the 24th of September.
I am as well.
Yeah. I'll have two absences that day.
On the 24th?
24th of September.
I'm going fishing.
Okay, so.
Psych.
Okay. Item 18, adjourn to closed session. And before we do that, once again, opportunity for the public to come forth on our closed session item, which is a public employee performance evaluation tonight for the city attorney. Any comments on that from the public? Seeing none. Then the council will adjourn to closed session at this time. And just to indicate, our report out of closed session, if there is one, will be given at the next regularly scheduled council meeting. So council is adjourned to closed session at this time. Thank you.